Hello and welcome to the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we hear from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week the focus of our programme is the 2018 edition of the UBS Global Real Estate Bubble Index. Price bubbles, often seen in property markets, refer to substantial, sustained mispricing of a particular asset, the existence of which bubble cannot be proved until and unless it bursts. The annual UBS index gauges the risk of a bubble on the basis of such patterns. Which global cities are at the highest risk of experiencing this? Our panel will tell us, and they'll also discuss the affordability crisis that's gripping markets and dominating headlines. We'll hear too from the editor of Monocle for some tips on addressing that crisis and building sustainable and effective residential developments and neighbourhoods in our cities. We start with Jonathan Wallachin, Executive Director and Head of US Real Estate Research for the CIO of UBS Wealth Management. Jonathan, we've talked about previous bubble indexes. Maybe you can start by telling us why this area remains of interest and relevance to you and your colleagues.
Excellent question, Tom. And there's a few things. I mean, real estate in general has always been an asset class of great interest to our client base, whether it be residential or commercial real estate. And if you take it one step further, many, many of our clients not only own a primary residence, as many people around the world do, but for a number of higher net worth clients, they'll own multiple residences in different geographies. And so the purpose of this is to really help our clients who are looking to purchase residential real estate, either as primary residence or for investment purposes, to understand both the absolute and relative risks of major business centers around the world. This is obviously not all-encompassing in that there are a lot of different markets in the world, but that's what we're trying to help people do. But I think it's also important to help people understand what this report doesn't do. Because when people see the word bubble, there are times they hearken back most recently to 2008, 2009, where there was global worldwide liquidity crisis and the bursting of the housing bubble in the U.S. What we are not saying here, and I want to emphasize that word again, we are not saying here is that any of these markets, even the ones that score high on in bubble risk territory, that the bubble is imminently going to burst. And we're very clear, and we're saying we're highlighting what we think are extended valuations or based on the metrics that we use in the report. These are markets that are extended in value that are at risk, and I emphasize the word at risk, for a correction. But the key here is, and I'll look at Hong Kong, which has scored in the 4 years we've done this very high. Hong Kong has been a market you could have made this argument about for years, but Hong Kong is a very vibrant market and there's limited amount of land. And so it's important to remember that, you know, excesses or extreme valuation situations in any asset class can go on for very, very long. So what we're not doing is calling a top, we're not calling a bursting of a bubble, we are highlighting risks. So I hope that helps.
Another word, Jonathan, like bubble, that needs to be used carefully is crisis. And it's a term that crops up in the introductory section of the piece and a good few times throughout, indeed, particularly in the context of this affordability crisis. Can you tell us, Jonathan, what that crisis is and maybe what it means?
Affordability, I suppose if you got 10 people, you get 12 answers to it. But the way we think about affordability is when you look at it and you look at it both relative to incomes and relative to alternative forms of shelter. And I think it's important to remember that people tend to think, they hear the word housing, they tend to think of a single family residence, whether that be a single family or it could theoretically be a condominium or something like that. But remember, there's shelter. So for people who opt not to live at home or in multi-generational settings, their choices really are to own or to rent in that shelter decision. And so in looking at the relative cost of ownership to shelter, that can also help people understand affordability. So in the U.S., and let me speak just to the U.S. for a second, there has been a lot of talk about the air quote, the word affordability crisis. So if you look at the growth in home prices, just if I asked you logically, you would say there should be a relationship over the long term between the growth in incomes and the growth in home prices. And historically, that's been accurate. We've had two situations since 1990 in the United States where that wasn't true. There was the inflating of the housing bubble in the 2003, 4, 5, 6 period, and then the post-recovery beginning around 2010, 2011. And so I think that's what people were referring to, where we certainly are starting to see increases in wages, but home prices have been rising significantly faster, largely a function of a dearth of available inventory. You're right, the word bubble and the word crisis sometimes bring visions to people's minds. But affordability is certainly a more challenging situation, particularly when you get below a certain income or asset level.
Matthias Kochek is real estate analyst at UBS. Matthias, let's look at some of the key findings of the report. I guess the headline seems to be the cities in the report that are in so-called overvalued territory. Is that the right place to start?
This seems to be the main headline, so where the risk is the highest. So currently we have two sections that are kind of overvalued. One can be bubble risk, and the second one is called overvalued. And bubble risk is even more overvalued than, overvalued. And the highest bubble risk appears to be in Hong Kong, Munich, and Toronto, so in those three big cities. But we have also several other cities that are also that have overvalued housing markets.
What do these overvaluations mean in real terms, Matthias? If we looked at affordability, for example, the report seeks to explain what that means and how overvaluations can impact this affordability.
We have the indicator, the median price to income multiple, which calculates how many years you need to earn to be able to afford 60 square meters, so about 650 square feet big flat. And those indicators has increased from about 5.5 in 2008 to 7.5 today when we calculate the average over all the cities.
Now, Jonathan Wallachin, earlier you mentioned themes like lax underwriting, attitudinal shifts regarding real estate as an asset class. Can we take a look now at the regulatory side of things? And changes on the policy side too. What do we need to be mindful of, particularly in the US market, which is your focus, of course, Jonathan, to establish the right context, I suppose, for this research piece and help to build a really comprehensive overview going forward?
It's an excellent question. It's also a very key question because, to paraphrase the last president of the United States, who said elections have consequences, well, my phrase is policy has consequences. And coming out of the 2008-2009 recession, again, without relitigating history, there were some excesses that needed to be addressed. And while we can debate whether Dodd-Frank went too far, the point is the Dodd-Frank bill did force the lending industry to really take a very close examination of its lending practices, and also did force consumers to revisit what they were doing. And so while we've certainly seen some relaxation by the current president and the current administration on some of the maybe parts of Dodd-Frank that maybe went too far, in general you have a banking industry that and a mortgage industry that is much more cognizant of appropriate underwriting standards. We've had the separation of the appraisal process from the underwriting process. It should be completely arm's length, and I would completely agree with that statement. And so I don't want to tell you there are no excesses out there, because there's always somebody doing something. It's just the nature of capitalism. But in general, I think policy has gone towards, let's not have a repeat of what we did. Now, a lot of people have looked at the recovery in both residential and commercial real estate prices here in the U.S. and are very quick to say, oh, we're back in bubble territory. Now, you have to look at the interest rate environment. The interest rate environment, I think, has been very conducive to an increase in values. But if I look across the underwriting transom in both residential and commercial real estate, it has largely been what we call appropriate. If you look at the Federal Reserve's quarterly senior loan officer survey, it's called the SLUS. It has a wonderful acronym. Although it has shown on a relative basis, maybe a little bit of loosening, net-net, the underwriting standards have been more on the conservative side, and that's where they should be, because we don't want a repeat of lending money to people who really are just not creditworthy borrowers.
Another big-picture question here on regulation, on policy development. Real estate's a market that's very much subject to, it can be heavily shaped by, changes in those areas. Matthias Kochek, I guess people need to bear that in mind too, right?
As property became too pricey for local population, for the citizens, over the past few years, regulations were introduced from regulations like stamp duties or rent control measures. And those regulations combined with tighter lending conditions can abruptly end the real estate boom in the market. So regulation can have a huge impact and can end the boom if they are too strong.
Still to come, we'll change tack and hear from Monocle's editor about some fresh thinking that might address the affordability crisis. Monocle's editor Andrew Tuck is the host of the radio station's programme about cities, The Urbanist, and the editor of a new book from Monocle all about building better cities. I sought Andrew's take on the affordability crisis. I began by asking him whether, in fact, in some markets, we need to somehow get away from the notion that everyone should aspire to be homeowners. Do we need to, in some way, pivot away from that idea?
Well, you're talking there about ownership, but I think even if you back away from that as the topic, you then have affordability in the rental market as well. So if you go to Switzerland, for example, where there is more of a tradition of being a renter rather than a buyer, there they have the same debate about affordability, because if you live in downtown Zurich, it's just tough to find an apartment at an affordable rent. So there's other seismic things that have to happen. It doesn't just because you tip people into renting doesn't mean that you get rid of the affordability crisis.
Well, let's look at that then. And again, it's something we often talk about on your programme, The Urbanist, and we're interested in the magazine's pages and indeed our book about building better cities, about how to address some of these problems, which are often structural, aren't they, in character? Now, there's no easy fixes, but what are some sort of Monocle principles, I suppose, that help to address some of the themes that shape that affordability crisis?
Well, I guess you have to come down to the first brutal tactic, which is legislation. So do you want to say to a market that actually when you build homes, certain quantities of them have to be pitched at a certain level? Now, they've tried that in London, and it kind of happens with some success and some failures. So here in London, for example, you're allowed to have a certain percentage of a project that's for what's called affordable housing. But what often happens is, in the past, people have said, OK, let's build that down the street away from the nice housing that we're putting up for sale or for the kind of wealthier buyer, and let's skew it like that. There's a story just this week in the papers here in the UK about access to a swimming pool and a gym in one project where it's only for the wealthy residents, and there's this feeling that segregation then happens. So that's one tool, demanding that you build a fixed quota of proper affordable housing, and it can be made to work. And I think another thing is to say, which isn't great for a show about investment, but is to say, should you stop people being able to buy homes and apartments just to rent out, potentially not even to residents in the city, but we have this huge market in the most important popular capitals for the likes of Airbnb, which has distorted this market in ways that people just couldn't have predicted a decade ago.
Well, interesting then, on that point, whether it's about regulation, legislation, who takes the lead in places where this is being addressed more effectively? Is it about City Hall? I think we've spoken about this before, but is it about private investment? It can be about more enlightened developers who have a more social conscience. They understand that there's other factors. It's not just about getting a particular price per foot of their development. Who takes the lead where it works well, and who, in general terms, should be taking the lead, in your view?
I think it's always going to be difficult to say to a developer, here's a piece of land that you've got, build something on it that's going to make less money by doing this than this. So unfortunately, there does have to be some push. And often the developer might be quite keen to do that, but they've got people who are invested in their company, or they've got backers who are saying, no, we need to go for the best return on our money. So I think you need a little bit of push from City Hall. But you do find developers who are thinking imaginatively and how they can both make money and deliver on affordability. So we are seeing a shrinking in the size of units, which isn't always bad, especially when you're talking about single people who are willing to trade a little bit less space for being in a central location. And I think that's important. And I think we all have to kind of think that actually we will have probably smaller homes and apartments going forward as our cities densify. I think there's also an interesting thing, which is, you know, we've seen over the last 20 years a return to city cores, this rush of enthusiasm about living in the downtown, whether that's in Los Angeles, for example, where that's really taken off. But I think what we're also now beginning to think is actually when we can be more mobile with our work and we can work off our laptops and we don't have to go into the city centre, we don't have to be using the transport, is there an argument for thinking that actually we need to build up on the peripheries of cities? We need to make more interesting places there where land tends to be cheaper and where you can still connect in new modes for mobility and things. So lots of cities, I think, are trying to say, look, we can't cope with all of this affordability crisis in the city core. Let's look at our old suburbs. How do we renew them? How do we regenerate them? And I think that's where some of the most interesting work will happen as this world of work and as the way that we live changes.
Finally on the programme, a summary from you, if we can, Matthias Kocek, one particular takeaway, maybe on price corrections and where perhaps those are more or less likely?
Likelihood of a price correction is higher in strongly overvalued markets than in the more balanced ones. And taking less risk in those overheated markets has historically paid off on average. According to our index, when you're in the bubble risk zone, so in the highest overvaluation zone, it is highly probable that a crisis will happen within the subsequent 12 quarters, so 3 years.
Jonathan Wallachin, to you finally, maybe the big lesson or a piece of advice here for investors, for people that have maybe read the Global Real Estate Bubble Index and thought, I need to review my decisions here, reconsider strategy, what would you urge them to bear in mind?
I would encourage your listeners to use this report in the appropriate way, which is to help them assess both absolute and relative risk and not to say, oh my God, I do not want to buy in market X because it's in quote unquote bubble territory. I will buy in market Y because it's scored as underpriced, because there's a lot of decisions go into that, which really takes me into what I wanted to add, which is, you know, I spent a lot of time with our clients talking about the decision to buy a home. And when a client will ask me the question, is this a good time to buy a home or should I buy this home? I will typically go back to them with a series of questions before I answer it. And I let their answers basically be their answer. And the very first question I ask them is, are you buying this for shelter or are you buying it for investment? Because if you're buying it for investment, then we have to start asking about things like time horizon, near-term, mid-term, and long-term liquidity needs, and should values decline, how will that impact your lifestyle, your financial situation? And so these are all part and parcel of the investment decision. So whether it's purchasing a home for investment purposes or for shelter purposes, this is part and parcel of an overall financial decision, and we constantly emphasize to our clients, this should be done in conjunction with your financial advisor because this is part and parcel of one's overall financial picture. And so please do consult your financial advisor so they can help understand, not only help understand for themselves, but help your listeners understand how this fits into their overall financial picture.
And that's Jonathan Wallachin, bringing us to the end of this 214th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at the website monocle.com or catch up via your preferred platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.